This
discussion on.
conference will now be recorded.
Do you need to do anything else, Alan?
Yeah, we have to run the roll.
All right, Tony, before I do that, we're just going to run a quick roll call.
Oh, good idea.
Tony Sheridan?
Here.
Mike Long?
Here.
Mary Ellen Jones?
Present.
Brett Brownchuk?
Here.
Treasurer Woods?
Here.
Commissioner Giulietti?
I'm on.
Deputy Commissioner Thames?
Present.
Karen Jarmoth?
Here.
Bob Aronson?
Present.
Matt Kelly?
Present.
And Scott Gilmartin?
Present.
Very good. But again, thank you all for being here, for joining us. Kevin, why don't you get going?
Okay, I'll start with the passenger numbers. For the month of April, we were down 96.6%. Boston was down 97.4%. Providence was down 96.9%, and Manchester has not reported. For the month of May, we only have our numbers and the numbers from Boston. In May, we were down 90.6%. Boston was down 94.8%. So when you look at passengers on a year-to-date basis through May, here at Bradley, we're down 50.6%. Boston is down 52.7%. So you see we're still being significantly impacted by the pandemic and the travel advisory that was just recently announced. But we have a separate discussion item for the COVID-19 response where I'll cover a lot of that under that separate discussion item. In terms of cargo, for the month of April here at Bradley, we were up positive numbers 28.9%. Boston was actually down 29.6%, and Providence was up 22.8%. Once again, Manchester did not report. For the month of May, again, we only have our numbers and Logan's numbers. For the month of May, we were up 13.4%, and Logan was down 26.6%. So when you look at that on a year-to-date basis through May, for cargo, we're up 8.9%, and Logan is down 15.1%. So cargo continues to be one of the bright spots for us here. A lot of our growth continues to be generated through Amazon and Pinnacle operations here at the airport. So a good sign for us as it relates to cargo. Just a couple of quick updates because we do have a pretty extensive agenda. I'll just quickly touch on a couple of items. On July 3rd here, we went to a condition that's called ATC Zero, where the air traffic control tower essentially was unmanned for about a two-hour period in order for them to do a deep clean of the facility because they have had a couple of COVID-19 cases diagnosed there. So that's a requirement that they have to go through where they have to evacuate the tower and do the deep cleaning. During the period of evacuation, I think it's important to note, it's not that air traffic is uncontrolled here at the airport. What happens is the TRACON takes over the control of traffic in and out of the airport. And the fact that it was a two-hour period, essentially from midnight to 2 a.m., we have a very low traffic count anyway. But I thought it was important to point out that that occurred. In terms of our CONRAC project here, the Ground Transportation Center project, that's moving along nicely. If you come to the airport, you'll see that the QTA facility is really taking shape. That's the quick turn facility. Once that's built, they'll then progress to the ready return area, which is really the body of the ground transportation facility. They're very much on schedule at this point, so we should meet the schedule that we've outlined. And just another major project here at Bradley, the restroom project, that is nearing completion as well. As you know, we've spent over $5 million to renovate all of the public restrooms here at the terminal. Right now, that's on schedule to be completed by the end of this October. Just a couple of updates for our GA airports at Waterbury, Oxford. We have received the final comments from U.S. Customs on the new customs facility. That's been incorporated into the plans, and we are expecting construction to start on that facility this summer. That will be a nice addition to the airport, and we do think will give us the ability to generate some additional international traffic coming into Waterbury, Oxford. At Groton New London, we're working with Survival Systems. That's a major tenant out there on a potential expansion. They'd like to expand their facilities to start conducting training to work with offshore wind farm operators. So a requirement of those operators to have this level of training, and Survival Systems feels that they can play a significant role in that. We're also working with what's called the TASMG military group at Groton New London. They're interested in looking at an expansion of their facilities. I don't know if you're familiar with TASMG out there, but they do a lot of helicopter repair, generate a lot of employment. So this is a good sign to see that they're looking to expand at the facility as well. And then lastly, just want to point out that in the packets that you have through the board portal, and if you don't have it pulled through the board portal, we can get this to you. There's a copy of our standard audit letter. Plant Moran, our auditor, will be starting the annual audit a little bit later this summer, probably towards the end of the month and in August. And we'll certainly be discussing the upcoming audit in a lot more detail at the audit committee that we anticipate holding sometime in the early part of August. So I don't know if there are any questions on any of that. If not, that concludes the report, Tony.
Thanks, Kevin. Any questions of Kevin?
I do have one question. With respect to the cargo report and the positive trends, is that something that's unique to Bradley, or is that a trend with airports of our size? I just want to be able to contextualize it a bit better.
Yeah, I think cargo generally has been up across the country, particularly with operations like Amazon, because with the pandemic situation, a lot of folks are staying home and doing a lot more buying online, right? So it's those deliveries that are increasing the cargo that's coming through here. The thing that we need to do a little bit more research on is understanding why Logan's cargo is dropping on a significant level. You know, when you start talking the percentages that we're talking, you know, being down, I think it was close to 29%. They were down 29.6% in April and then down another 26.6% in May. Not really too sure why that's occurring, whether or not, you know, there's diversion out to other airports. What I found interesting also is that TF Green has grown. Now, TF Green did have an Amazon operation at one point. Amazon has left that facility. So I suspect there is some diversion of cargo activity out of Boston into TF Green. Sometimes that could be a matter of cost structure of the airport. It's just more cost effective for the cargo operators to operate at smaller medium hub or regional airports versus the large hubs. But a long way of answering your question, Treasurer, that I think generally across the country, cargo is up simply because you have a lot more online buying going on.
Thank you.
Other questions or thoughts from any member? There be none. Why don't we move on, Kevin?
Okay. Just wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, the COVID-19 issues here at the airport, and I'll start off with the travel advisory that the governor's office announced about a week or so ago, and now that they want to progress into making passengers as they come through the airport sign health questionnaires and sign certifications that they'll agree to the 14-day quarantine. And that's drawn a lot of attention. I've had a number of media outlets approach us as to how this is going to be implemented, what our view of it is. And I've told folks that, you know, certainly here at the airport, we don't have the responsibility nor the qualifications to be making public health determinations, that this is firmly a state initiative versus an airport initiative to go forward with this travel advisory that requires the quarantine. But I'm also trying to highlight to those media outlets, it will have a significant impact on the airport, not only today, but long term. Because what I don't think a lot of folks are understanding, this is not just a matter of, you know, you have this travel advisory in place for 4 to 6 months, and then at the end of it, you know, everything returns to normal. We are in a very, very competitive environment to begin with, and that environment is getting even more competitive as the airlines are shrinking in size. So it's one thing for New York, for example, to experience this reduction as a result of the travel advisory for a 4 to 6 month period. At the end of that, the airlines will have to go back to New York because New York has to be in their route structure. A little bit different here at Bradley. The airlines do not have to return to Bradley. And in fact, what you hear from the airlines is a desire to shrink their operations coming out of this pandemic, that they're all going to be much smaller companies. So it's very likely that you will see some carriers, once, you know, they start withdrawing assets out of here as a result of the travel advisory, not return and look to try to serve the Connecticut market through either New York or Boston. So we're trying to make sure that the public health department and the governor's office understands the implications of some of these decisions that are being made with this travel advisory. Again, I'm not here to question the public health decisions that they're making. They have a tough job, and you know, there's a lot of tough decisions that have to be made, but we want them to be making these decisions on an informed basis, and hopefully that they're bringing some balance to this, because we are already seeing, you know, only being into this a week or so, some substantial reductions in terms of flight activity that's translating nationally into passenger reductions. Southwest has already pulled an Orlando flight for August. Spirit has cut their Florida schedule in half starting in August. Frontier has essentially eliminated their Orlando service. So that is going to really start to add up. Now, as I reported before, at the height of the pandemic here in Connecticut, if you went back to April, we were down almost 98%. Okay. Over the past month, we've been able to reduce that reduction to being down only somewhere between 70 to 75%. Unfortunately, as this travel advisory takes effect, I do think you're going to see those numbers start to climb back up into the 80s, and hopefully we don't get back into the 90s, but I suspect that that's a real possibility, because when you think through what's occurred here, there are now 22 states on this travel advisory, essentially half, you know, the geographic area of the U.S., and when you look at it from a population standpoint, it's probably more than half the population of the United States now is covered by this travel advisory. So when you think through, you know, particularly somebody on a leisure basis, you know, you're not going to take that trip out to California, spend a week's vacation time, and then come back here and take 2 weeks further to quarantine. And certainly on a business standpoint, it's almost impossible to conduct business if you have to first quarantine for 14 days and then conduct your 1 or 2 days worth of business. So there is going to be a significant impact so long as this travel advisory stays in place. And, you know, the criteria that's been put in place to put a state on the list, I do not see changing in a lot of these locations for probably months. So I do see that this travel advisory, you know, once it was announced, you're going to have this in place for quite some time. In terms of the certification and these health forms that are involved, we do not yet know from the governor's office what their expectation is. There's a meeting tomorrow that's been called where we'll be discussing this with the Department of Public Health and Josh Cabal. to understand fully what it is that they're trying to accomplish with these forms. I have already advised in the past the Department of Public Health that we do not have the resources here at Bradley to conduct this initiative for them. We'll certainly assist and participate to the extent that we can. But if you think this through, right, you essentially have to meet every flight coming into Bradley to advise people that you need to fill out this form. You have to give them an area to fill out the form and means to fill out the form. And it's not just flights coming from these impacted states. You essentially have to meet every flight because you'll have connecting passengers, for example, on a Philadelphia flight that originated in California. California is an impacted state. You know, certainly Pennsylvania isn't at this point. But the fact that the flight's coming from Pennsylvania doesn't mean that you don't have people on there from the impacted states. So there is a resource that's going to have to be dedicated to this to meet each individual flight to explain this to them. We can ask the airlines if they're willing to participate, but let's face it, you know, the airlines are already stretched thin on some of their staffing. I think they're going to be challenged to be, you know, put in a position to distribute forms and collect forms. You know, if you utilize Florida as an example, Florida tried to implement the program like this. If you flew into Florida, you were met once you exited the jet bridge by a public health official along with some contract employees that handed out forms, monitored people, filling them out, and then you had to turn them in before you leave that area. I believe Florida has even discontinued that process right now because you can imagine how onerous it is. So more to come on how we're going to help the state, you know, initiate the program. But I think it's very important that we explain to folks this is a state initiated program. This is a public health program, not an airport program, because we're already getting questions from the general public as to how are you going to enforce this. That's something that has to be directed to the state. So before I go on, I don't know if there are any questions generally about this travel advisory and how it's going to be implemented.
Well, Kevin, on the face of it,
if the assistance of the airlines is to be requested, I think the request would be vastly more effective if it came from the states of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut together.
Well, as you know, they're already processing the forms over in New York. New York has been doing that for at least a week to a week and a half. We did check with the Port Authority. What's occurring in New York is the Port Authority police and the public health officials are actually coordinating the distribution and collection of these forms. At airports such as Syracuse, which are non-Port Authority airports, the state police and public health officials are carrying out the program. I do believe the airlines are cooperating to a certain extent over there. For example, I believe Southwest attempts to actually distribute the forms at the initiating location before you get to New York. We are trying to convince the governor's office that there are apps you can utilize and you can publicize at the initiating location before you even fly to Bradley. Go online and fill out the form while you're in flight or while you're sitting waiting to board the flight. So I think there's a lot of ways that we can suggest to them to help with this. But again, we have to really see, you know, what level of resource the state is willing to put behind this to create applications and you know, hopefully have online capability to complete these things. Again, I agree with you, Bob. I guess if there is going to be a very specific request to the airlines, probably makes a lot of sense to combine with New Jersey, New York, as well as Connecticut. But I think you're going to get, you know, probably varying reactions of compliance with that. As you know, the airlines are not required to do this. This would simply be if they're willing to assist at work. We can't turn around and tell an airline you can't operate into Bradley, you know, unless you're willing to distribute and collect these forms. You know, you have a whole level of legalities that are associated with that, not the least of which is, you know, restraint on interstate trade. You know, at the end of the day, I do think it's going to be a combination of things that are going to have to be done to make this work. Okay.
Well, Kevin, before you go on, it seems to me that there's, and maybe you've done this already, but there needs to, someone needs to put a stop to this effort until all the details are figured out. There's not much point in having a regulation publicly stated and then no follow through. And as you pointed out, the following through part is the complicated part. So the way I read the announcement is that it's in effect at the moment. Is that a correct assumption on my behalf?
The travel advisory is in effect. The filling out of the forms and the certifications is not. And the governor originally announced that he wanted this in place before the weekend. I think they have realized the logistics issues associated here. He yesterday announced that within a week, so sometime next week, it's intended to be put in place. And as I said, that's why we're meeting tomorrow. Hopefully I can share a lot of our thoughts on this and try to help the state as much as we can to accomplish what it is that they're trying to accomplish here.
Okay. Any other thoughts or questions from board members before Kevin moves on? Okay, Kevin, you're good.
Well, one thing I should highlight, though, in relation to the travel advisory, we did push, when it was initially announced, the travel advisory, for a testing option, meaning if you could demonstrate a negative COVID test, you did not have to quarantine for the 14 days. And the governor was very open to that and ultimately put that option in place. So that exists right now. If you do have to travel, you find you can't quarantine, so long as you get a negative COVID test from any point 72 hours prior to traveling to after your arrival here, you can use that negative COVID test in lieu of quarantining. And one of the things we are looking to do here at the airport is to try to open up the potential of having people tested right here at the airport. And we have, you know, located a lab. Tony has worked with me on this a bit, here in the state, that is willing to open up a site here at the airport and do testing. One of the things that we're talking to them right now is we may first open that up as testing of CAA employees to see can they handle volume, and then potentially expand it to all airport employees, and then ultimately expand it to passengers as well. But a lot of that will depend on their ability to process volume. But I think it makes a lot of sense for us to try to go in that direction. You know, right now, if you're coming from one of these impacted states trying to get that test within 72 hours of travel, it's probably next to impossible, right? Because their testing capabilities are being challenged simply because of the increases in cases. That's why they're on the list. Here in Connecticut, you know, again, you can come into Connecticut, quarantine until you can get the test. And then if your test is negative, then you can stop the quarantine. But at the same time, at some point, you have to be concerned about stressing the testing capability here in state. That's why if we can get a lab that has the capacity to dedicate some of that capacity to the airport, I think it does make sense to do it here right at the airport. But right now, there is a fair amount of testing capacity. There's over 100 testing sites here in the state that are available for people to get a test once they return from one of these impacted locations. But you should be aware we are pursuing, and if we can reach an agreement with this lab to do testing here at the airport, we will most likely move forward with that. Okay? And how that would work is for our employees, naturally the CAA would pick up the cost of testing that would be required. It'd be a convenience for our employees to get tested here at the airport versus having to send them to other testing sites. But for other airport employees, airline employees, for example, or just general passengers, the testing site would be required to either process their insurance, or there would have to be a cash payment type system set up where somebody would actually pay for the test if they didn't have insurance that would cover it. Okay.
Hey, Kevin, a question. How quickly would the test results be available?
That's one of the things that why we want to enter into this slowly to see what is the rate of return. I mean, right now they're committing test results within 24 hours. Once volume starts to increase, that becomes a challenge because if you look at some of these impacted states, Quest, for example, that does a lot of the testing nationwide, Quest in some cases is not able to return these results for a week and a half. All right, so right. I think a lot of it is going to depend on the volume you process. I mean, we would look to negotiate something in any agreement we reach with this lab, you know, that, yes, test results would have to be received within 48 hours. I mean, because if you start getting into a thing where the test results aren't available for a week and a half, you might as well just complete the quarantine, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Just moving on, just, in terms of some other COVID-related items, as you know, Aer Lingus and Air Canada services are still suspended here. That's not necessarily based upon the desire of the airline. They're still prohibited based on border restrictions to provide the service, but we continue to stay in touch with both carriers. Some unfortunate news, Delta just recently informed us that they will be permanently closing the maintenance station here as they have cutbacks throughout their system. So our maintenance station here will be closed by the end of the year. That's resulting in a loss of 22 jobs. They also have space here at the airport, so it results in a loss of about $300,000 worth of revenue. The hotel also advised us last week, and they announced today that they're moving forward with layoffs. There's about 100 jobs that are impacted as well. So, you know, as we see the prolonged impacts of the pandemic, and, you know, as I said, I don't want to harp on this travel advisory, but as that starts to create additional impacts, you're starting to see the results of some of these cutbacks. United Airlines has announced nationwide across their entire system, they're eliminating about 45% of their frontline U.S. workers. So there's no doubt we're going to continue to see some of these negative impacts in the aviation industry. And it goes with what I said earlier about the airlines emerging as much smaller carriers. On the concession update here, probably the most significant change that we've had is that the Black Bear restaurant has reopened. The bar seating, though, is eliminated, but there is table service back at the restaurant. And our new Dunkin' Donuts in Concourse C has reopened. Other than that, just those original concessions that we had open continue to operate. So we still have a lot of the concessions here at the airport closed, and we will keep them closed until passenger volume would dictate that they need to reopen. In terms of general safety precautions, we're continuing naturally with the increased cleaning and sanitization throughout the terminal building. We continue to have the mobile hand sanitizing stations out there for passengers to avail themselves as well. As it relates to our own workforce, on July 6th, we started a limited reopening of the workplace. Most employees that were telecommuting are now coming into the office about 2 days a week. We are maintaining the social distancing, and in some cases, we've modified the workplace to put plexiglass partitions in place for employee safety as well. But we are starting to reintroduce employees back into the workplace. We're also requiring employees, before they come to work or enter the workplace, they undergo a temperature check as well. So that's an added measure. As I mentioned before, meetings are limited to 10 people. We are requiring our employees to social distance in the meeting, as well as wear masks if they're not speaking. Travel to require employees, one per vehicle. So if this continues on into the snow season, we'll see how we'll handle snow plowing. Right now, limit vehicles to one person. In terms of the airline safety protocols, most of the airlines are continuing to keep middle seat open. For example, Southwest has pledged to do that through at least the end of September. We are seeing load factors on most of our flights are fairly depressed, so they certainly do have the ability to keep a lot more than the middle seat as well. All of the airlines operating here are requiring masks to be worn in flight. And in some cases, some airlines are tracking non-compliance with that and then banning passengers from flying on the airline in the future if they do not comply with wearing the masks. Many of the airlines have changed their boarding procedures here to make sure that they maintain the social distancing as people get onto aircraft. And with the exception of Spirit, and Spirit might be doing this, we just haven't been able to confirm it yet with them. All of the airlines here, as part of the check-in process, whether that's at the airport or it's online, are requiring passengers to certify to a health acknowledgement that you don't have a temperature on the day of flight, that you will wear a mask on the flight, that you'll maintain social distancing. So it's a general, you know, education awareness certification that passengers are being asked to go through when they check in. And then naturally, as you know, we've introduced our own program here. It's called the VDL Cares Program. VDLCares.com. It takes you to a direct link on our website where it outlines all of the measures we're taking here at the airport, what a passenger can expect when they come to the airport, what our airline partners are doing, and it gives links in some cases to our airline partner website so that you can really track what your entire journey will entail once you start at Bradley and get to your destination. So I think, you know, that was going a long way in terms of helping us recover passengers. It was kind of interesting to note, if you looked at our recovery going from that 98% to, you know, 70 to 75%, we had been recovering faster than the New York airport on a percentage basis, than the New York airports and Boston. You can read a lot into that. Does that mean we were doing a better job communicating, you know, how we're dealing with this issue at Bradley, or is it simply people felt a lot more safer flying through Bradley than they did more congested airports? Not 100% sure there, but as I said, we've put a lot of effort. Sharon and her staff have spent a lot of time on these programs, public, and get information out at what to expect. So I know I'm going on a bit. I'll stop there. I'd be happy to handle any questions about COVID response or the situation we find ourselves in.
Kevin, it's Madge. I guess one thing, I do want to ask people to go on mute. There seems to be a lot of background noise. If folks could just go on mute when they're not speaking.
If you could put your phones, everybody can put your phones on mute unless you're speaking, that'd be great.
Yeah, and thank you. And then I just have one maybe obvious observation, but you know, the airlines, of course, are just reeling from all of this. We see it here at Pratt. Obviously, it flows down to us as well in our business. But this travel advisory, and, you know, one example is Delta. They were planning to bring 1,000 airplanes back into service, and now they've had to back far away from that because of that drop in demand, and a lot of that coming from the impact of the travel advisory and that far-reaching sweep. So the airlines have been, you know, hopeful and trying to get ready to come back, but you know, it's just kind of being foiled at every turn between these practices and people's overall fears given the upsurge in cases in certain parts of the country. So this just will be a long slog.
On that point, I think it'd be very helpful, you know, if your government affairs folks could communicate that to the governor's office, because I do think they need this level of information to keep informing them on these decisions they're making. Because, again, I don't think it's necessarily intuitive that how far-reaching, you know, some of these issues are in terms of announcing something like this.
Yep. No, I can definitely talk to my folks about that.
Yeah.
Because the pain is very local.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I see Mike Long raising a hand.
I figured out how to turn my microphone back on. It seems to me that you're absolutely correct. There's much deeper danger here to our future at Bradley, I think, than most people realize. At the same time, there is also an opportunity here if we can get to the right folks to take advantage of it, and that is to bring our advantage to the attention of both the airlines and the traveling public about how you can get in and out of Bradley fairly easily, particularly when you compare it with the New York airports. And if there's some way that we could now begin to capitalize on that.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, Mike. And I think it's my sense, what I was indicating earlier, where, you know, we monitor the recovery numbers at all of the competing airports.
Fact. Well, it's really painfully obvious how difficult.
Yeah. But we know that people were reacting to that very point that you were making, that it's much easier to come through Bradley. The fact that it's a less congested airport, you know, we were able to maintain the social distancing a lot better that these other airports can. We were one of the first airports in the country to mandate wearing masks in the terminal to enter the terminal. And I think a lot of people responded to that. And that was part of this, you know, BDL Cares program to go out and promote that. So I do think we've been doing exactly what you're talking about. The problem becomes, you know, the travel advisory, 14 days of 14 days, no matter how you cut it. And we could be the most convenient, you know, airport in the world. Nobody's going to travel if they know coming into Connecticut or New York, you're going to have to quarantine for 14 days. It's a very, very big burden. And, you know, let's face it, as you talk to the public health folks, that's exactly what they're trying to accomplish. They're trying to discourage travel. Mm-hmm. So it is working completely opposite to what the mission of the CAA is, unfortunately.
So, Kevin, I think that's hard to disagree, but trying to be on the positive side of the energy map here, I think as we continue to move through all of this, I do think we have a great opportunity here potentially. And that's number one. I think that people, even when we're on the better side with this, will choose to be in areas that are less impacted by people, and we should be able to score on that. And the second thing is as companies allow their people to work from home, particularly in the New York area, people give up their apartments, their condos, and think about moving more up to Fairfield, this would be a great opportunity for us to jump on this. And as we think about Boston and people working from home more in the Worcester area, I think that's another great opportunity. So although tactically, I know we're under quite a burden with the bans and all of that, I've been trying to think a little bit more long-term I don't know if I would use the word windfall quite yet, but we might be able to capitalize on this given where we are. I mean, we are lowering our presence in the New York City area for sure. And those folks mostly live in the Greenwich Fairfield area that I think going forward might feel more comfortable about traveling to a place like Bradley, particularly when we're doing such great work on the airport construction and the amenities.
Yeah, no, As I said, I don't disagree with any of those points. And I think those have been advantages that we've been selling here at Bradley for a long time, quite frankly, you know, certainly prior to the pandemic. Our bigger challenge here is trying to deal with a very stressed industry and convincing airlines that Bradley is going to be the place that you need to come back to, right? And that's a bigger challenge because, again, as they have shrunk these companies down, and they can, you know, I'm sure Mary Ellen will acknowledge this point as well, they have all indicated they're going to emerge from the pandemic much smaller companies. That means they're going to limit the assets they have, less aircraft. And as I said time and time again, we're not only competing with New York and Boston, we're competing with every airport in the country for those limited assets. That's why we have structured what we've structured all along in terms of the cost structure here, making sure that our CPE was always the lowest CPE in the region. But keep in mind now, we're competing with every other airport in the country. And as an airline withdraws assets from a location, right, it's being driven by this travel advisory, and they start pulling assets out and they put it elsewhere, you now have extra work to do to try to convince them, well, take it out of where you put it and put it back here. And that's the challenge that we're going to have. And yes, we're cultivating and we continue to cultivate the relationships we have with the airlines. But I want to make sure people understand, do not minimize the challenge that has just been thrown our way by essentially taking airline activity and travel activity away from this airport.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate that.
Other thoughts? So let's move on, Kevin.
Okay, just quickly on the next discussion item, just wanted to advise you that we have affected the termination of the relationship with Standard Parking and entered into that new management structure with them. So the responsibility for the parking lots has now been transferred from Standard Parking to the airport. The next piece of this, we had a notice period that had to go out to the trustee and bondholders, but we will be paying off the parking bonds. That's scheduled to occur on August 3rd. So following the notice period, those will be fully paid off. And now that we've inherited the responsibility for the parking lots, we have looked at the management structure here at the airport, and we are reorganizing a couple of things within our operations department. We will be designating one of our senior managers to take the lead on managing the overall parking operation, not only from an operating standpoint, but from a business standpoint, where we'll be looking to introduce new levels of service, for example, our own version of valet and off-airport parking. This person will be responsible for rate setting and making recommendations on rate setting. Ultimately, the individual will also take on the responsibility of managing the ground transportation center and all of the aspects of that, along with all of the roadway and ground transportation operations here at the airport. So it's a fairly significant job that we've created, and we're very fortunate that we did not have to bring somebody in from the outside to do that. We do have a staff member that we believe has the full capability of taking this on, and we're simply going to transfer that person out of our operations group into this new parking and ground transportation position. So that will be occurring shortly. So I don't know if there are any questions, but you know, that transfer and termination was done essentially as we discussed in prior board meetings, according to the term sheets that you were provided. So we're very pleased that that was accomplished. It does take care of an area where in the past we've received an awful lot of the airport complaints out of parking, and it's nice to be able to implement our own goals and objectives for the parking product here at the airport. I don't know if there are any questions on that.
Just a comment, well done on all of that.
Yes, congratulations.
Well, certainly I want to thank the treasurer and his staff were certainly instrumental in getting a lot of the bond work taken care of and getting that moving forward. So the treasurer deserves a lot of credit for that as well.
Well, thank you for all of that. Any other thoughts on that before we leave it? No, so let's move to committee reports. Scott, is Scott with us today?
He is.
Oh, Scott, it's yours.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. The Economic Development Committee met yesterday afternoon by phone. You received in your package a term sheet regarding Clay Lacy Aviation and the assignment of a former agreement out at Waterbury Airport. We view this as very, very positive news, and this could pave the way for additional growth and development out of Waterbury, Oxford. Voted unanimously to bring it to the board with our recommendation for acceptance. I might want to ask Kevin if he would to give the board a little bit of understanding about who Clay Lacy Aviation is and what this may potentially mean going forward for Waterbury, Oxford.
Sure, I could do that, Scott, quickly. We do have an item scheduled for executive session to get into the specific details of the agreement because it's still under negotiation. So I won't get into the specifics. We'll save that for executive session.
Right.
But just in general, Clay Lacy is, you know, what I would consider an overall, all-around aviation firm. They provide fixed-based operator services. They manage aircraft fleets. They offer air charter services. They repair aircraft. They do avionics work. So this is a great potential addition for us out there. They already are a tenant at Waterbury Oxford. Essentially, they're focusing on the air charter business right now. But by entering into this arrangement with them, you know, they'll be able to expand to bring all those other capabilities that I just talked about. And Clay Lacy is a national firm. Right now, they're headquartered on the West Coast, but they have locations throughout the country. They've been in business for over 50 years, and they have over 500 employees nationally. So we do believe, we have a couple of things that we have to talk about in executive session regarding the negotiation. But we do believe if we can get to a point of agreement, this would be a great addition for Waterbury Oxford.
Thanks, Kevin. And we'll save further conversation on this till executive session. Just a couple of other comments. The board may remember that last year, probably about this time, we began and approved the process to environmental reviews to better define a number of parcels that we have for development at the airport. These would appear to offer the best opportunity for development. That work is being completed. We expect the final reports next month. So once we have them, we can report back with respect to those parcels. Only thing I would mention is, and I have not been in the airport, but I'm told, and again, staff, please jump in, that there's a Dunkin' Donuts facility there that has their new concept in place. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So there is there is even during these times, there is movement and improvement, and we can talk more about Waterbury Oxford executive session.
Other thoughts while we're in public session? No. So why don't we move on then to go? Excuse me.
Tony, I'll make a motion to go into executive session for the purposes of discussing and negotiating strategy for a lease property at Waterbury Oxford, to discuss and negotiating strategy regarding leasing property at Bradford International, for the purpose of discussing negotiating strategy regarding airport leases, discussion of potential acquisition of other airports, and discussion of potential contract awards.
That motion has been made. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Made and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Oh, so carry. Alex, can you do your magic here and give us a shout when you're ready?
Yep, so at this time, we'll move into executive session. There's only one member of the public on the line, so caller two, this is solely for your benefit, but you're going to be removed from the meeting now, and what you need to do is call back into the meeting using the same details that you originally did. In about 5 minutes, you'll be placed into a waiting room during the executive session, and then once the executive session concludes, you'll rejoin the meeting in public session. So. Again, you'll be removed now. Please call back, same details, and you will be put in the waiting room. Thank you.
Let us know when you're all set, Alex.
Yep, just stop in the room.
This conference will now be recorded.
Thank you. We're now out of executive session, and no action was taken while we were in executive session. There are two action items that I'm aware of. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin. But the discussion of negotiation strategy regarding the lease of property at Bradley for the American Airlines. Any questions, comments, thoughts, or emotion? Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Motion has been moved. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Further discussion? There be none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
You get that, Alex? Okay, and then the second item is item C, negotiating the strategy regarding airport leases, all tenants, and a motion is in order.
So moved. Seconded.
Second, further discussion. There be none. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Is there another action item here? I don't have one, but is there one, Kevin? Do you know?
Tony, just a point. I'm going to ask if you can re-vote action item B. And very specifically vote it that the consideration and action upon the lease modifications is to defer up to an additional 3 months.
Good point.
I'll remake the motion as amended.
Seconded.
Further discussion? There have been none. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. So, The next board meeting. When is that scheduled for?
I believe it's in September. Alex is going to look up the date real quick.
And any board members, are there any discussion items that we would like to have placed on that agenda? There be none. So the next board meeting will be,
I think it's September 23rd.
September 23rd.
That's correct.
Very good. If there's no more business to be brought before the board, then we a motion is in order for adjournment.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, so carried. Well, thank you very much, everyone, and Kevin and your staff for all the good work.
All right, thank you.
Take care now,
everyone. Be safe, everyone.
Thank you.
Take care.